This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Division of the Arts and Humanities at the University of Chicago, offering an interdisciplinary Master of Arts program in Humanities that provides individualized attention in a supporting community. The flexible curriculum allows students to focus coursework within a single department or engage with multiple disciplines, creating a uniquely tailored graduate degree. Applications now open for the April 30th deadline at humanities.uchicago.edu.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Don't forget to keep listening all the way to the end of this episode to get a rundown of the big Chicago area stories of the day. But first, Chicago has a rich history of cultivating a community of Black poets, writers, artists, and musicians, particularly during the Chicago Black Renaissance. From the 1930s through 50s, Chicago was home to some of the biggest Black creatives, like Richard Wright, Gwendolyn Brooks, and Langston Hughes. And Chicago continues to be a space for Black poets today. We're going to dive into the history and future of Black poetry here in the city. At the table, we had Shianta Dorsey, who's Division Chief of Archives and Special Collections at the Chicago Public Library. Avery R. Young, who's Chicago's first poet laureate. And Isara Abbas, a Sudanese-American poet and archivist, and founder of the Sudanese Poetics Archive and the Sudanese Literature Archive. Shianta started off our conversation by talking about why Chicago was such a hub for Black poets and writers.
I would definitely say it is because of the Great Migration. And for those who don't know, the Great Migration is like this great movement of Black people out of the South by the millions. And they are settling in a lot of northern urban locales. And one of those major locales was Chicago. And so they're coming here, tripling, you know, the Black population here in Chicago, doubling it. And they're bringing basically their talents, their way of living, their culture. They're contributing their labor, their intellectual and human capital to the city. And they are condensed in this very small area within the city called the Black Belt, which is centered around 35th and State Street.
Okay.
And so this is the microcosm and the environment that a lot of these writers find themselves in, and that is basically cultivating this renaissance that is happening. And some of the artists that come out of the Black Renaissance are Southerners themselves.
Yeah, and we're talking about the period from the 1930s through roughly the 50s.
Yes.
I gave a few names there, but anyone else you want to shout out as far as writers and poets that came out of that Black literary renaissance?
Well, you definitely mentioned Richard Wright, Margaret Walker, Arna Bontemps, as well as Gwendolyn Brooks are like the major, most visible players that come out of it.
Yeah. Let's turn now to Isara and Avery, because, I mean, you're both poets. Are there...
On some day.
are there any Chicago poets from that movement that Shianta just named and that their work just is still inspiring you today? You first, Avery.
Well, I would like to also mention that Chicago was a nice place for Black publication. So the places where those poems were published, like The Defender, the one that stands out to me and is probably as a great influence on me as much as Mama Gwendolyn was the Simple series that Langston Hughes did in The Defender. So where he took Simple was... basically persona poems of an everyday Joe talking about his life in the tenements and in the neighbor in the neighborhood. So I would say definitely.
Yes.
Langston Hughes.
That's a powerful one. Yeah. What is it about their works that you think continue to be powerful, Isra?
I believe, like, especially during, like, the civil rights movement, like, a lot of these poets really stand up for within the city in Chicago and throughout. And like Langston Hughes, and there's also Audre Lorde, like, really impacted the movement during that time and sharing, raising the voices regarding that.
Take us back, Shianta. I mean, how did these writers gather, and how did having that community of creatives really impact the work that they were putting out at the time?
Well, being that I work at the Chicago Public Library, right, it would be remiss of me not to talk about the George Cleveland Hall branch of the Chicago Public Library. It is this intellectual center during the Black Renaissance. It's located on 48th and Michigan. It opens in 1932, mm-hmm. and it's basically this community anchor, like, on its first, like, opening day. Like, 1,100 people from the community come and visit this library,
That's
right?
That's incredible.
It's the only full-service library in the African-American community at this point. And so this is an intellectual center. You have Vivian G. Harsh, who is the branch manager at Hall. And she basically fosters, like, this literary salon at Hall. And so all of these writers, like Brooks and Wright and Bone Temps, they are coming there. They are leading and participating in her book and literature review forum. They're presenting their own works there. They are interacting with patrons. So the library is sort of like this great equalizer. So you have Black people from all different socioeconomic backgrounds there. And so they are able to interact not only with patrons and, like, the sectors of Black life in Chicago, but also the other writers that coalesce there as well.
Yeah, you looked very impressed listening back to her, you know.
No, I know everything she's talking about.
But I'm looking at you, you know, as the city's first poet laureate. I mean, yes. I remember it being such a joy sitting down with you.
What
in the
$5 do?
You did it for 2 years. Yes. How do you look back and reflect on that time?
Oh, I had a great time as the city's poet laureate, but I had a great time my whole ride here as a laureate. I've had the pleasure of teaching folk like Jamila Woods and Nate Marshall, Eve Ewing. I've, like, they're my nieces and nephews, and from them, the now Monsanas just met this wonderful writer by Jermaine Nolan, who is just, like, dynamite. So
are you all gathering in the way that, you know, we described from back in the day, or
in many ways? There's from the tradition of the Obasi Writers Group, which was with Baba Haki and Mama Angela Jackson, Osini Perkins, and then there's Louder to the Bomb, where a lot of the youth come from. Youth Speaks in California, U Media here at the Harry Washington Library. It's so many spaces, Soul Restoration with Dina Dean, and it's so many spaces where folks gather. I call it where they come to worship.
Yeah.
Because poetry at its simplest is testimony.
It takes you to church.
Right. And that's why I call it where they come to worship. And so you have, from these spaces, you have a group of folks who get together and they're writing. If it's a poet, a open mic, or a writing workshop, they're coming together, and the synergy creates a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful bounty of what becomes the city's legacy in literature.
Well, speaking of workshops, Isra, you are hosting a Sudanese Valentine's Day poetry workshop. It's happening this Saturday, right? What can participants expect?
Yes, so everyone's welcome to come join, and it's for basically poetry regarding love and romance, but also the grief and loss that that people have dealt with over their lives. And so it's a space where it's a very welcoming and inviting space for anyone to be able to write and share what they are either, you know, going through, or just in general of like to have that space to share with others. And also, it's a, since it's like a mutual aid fund for Sudan, it's a space for people to get to know what is happening in Sudan and bring awareness regarding that, and to also get to know Sudanese poets as well. And so that could be found in the Neurobloom, mhc.com/rest2026. And that's available, all the information regarding the workshop and other events available. And it's something that I really look forward to.
Yeah. No, that sounds like a wonderful event and much needed.
Yes,
much
exactly. Needed. Yes.
Can you read something for us? I understand yes. You've prepared Wings by Raj Bishara.
Yes. So this there's a poem called Wings, written by a Sudanese poet named Raj Bishara. So I'll just read a part from there. Wings. I wake up every morning and dust the ashes off my body. My bed is an ashtray. I pretend I'm a phoenix. I know in another life I had wings. Maybe I was water, full of myself, empty of nothing, transparent, pure, and my poetry is the way I dance with the moon.
What major themes, you know, as we talk about Isra's workshop that's upcoming and really bringing awareness to like what's happening in Sudan, for instance. What were the themes, major themes that writers like Langston Hughes and Gwendolyn Brooks, what were they writing about back in the Renaissance days? And I wonder if we're seeing an evolution when it comes to subject matter from then to now.
Yeah, most definitely. So you have Richard Wright and, you know, and Native Son, where he is talking about, is set in Chicago. He is discussing basically the effects of structural violence on Black Chicagoans' lives and the different responses to that. That is also centering, you know, it's coming from the experience of a Black male. Then you have Gwendolyn Brooks and Street in Bronzeville, mm-hmm. where she is talking about like regular folk, Black folks from all walks of life. And talking about the Black experience in America, which is the American experience, right?
Yes.
And then there is also sort of two, you have people like St. Clair Drake and Horace Caden. They're writing the Black Metropolis, which is a sociological study of African Americans and a Black urban life in Chicago. So, yeah, those are all themes that we are still debating today.
We like, are.
Is she
talking about 2026 right now?
Right. 250 years into this.
That's right.
Right.
So. What does that signal to you, Avery? That we're still talking about some of these same topics.
One, I think it signals a number of things. The most significant thing is somehow these stories aren't heard, or that the hearing of these stories don't necessarily bring in any level of change. They are important to say and tell, because I always argue, if you want to know what happened in 1955, you have to read the poetry of 1955 to understand it. The poetry is the voice of the people. When we think about Black poetry in specific, there's the Langston Hughes era where Black folks are telling America, hey, we're here. Mm-hmm. We're American. And then you have the Mama Nikki Giovanni era, which is the Black civil rights movement, the Black arts movement, where Black folks are telling Black people we're beautiful as we are. And then you have my generation and beyond, who is asking that we deal with our humanity in ways that we have not seen improve, right? You still kill us. You still devalue us. You still question our pride in ourselves as somehow hate towards you. And that's not and that's not the case.
You said it. And how, what does that make you think, Isra, about the themes that come up in poetry by Sudanese poets?
Yes.
Are there links?
Yes, there's a lot of, you know, connections, similarities, like in the Sudanese community and the history in Sudan where poetry is a way to is used for to speak up of what's happening regarding what's going on, but also it's a form of expression. And similar with music and other forms of art where people use to express themselves of how they feel. And there's a connection regarding that where basically, in the history with Sudan where a lot of songs are turned into poems and a lot of poems are turned into songs, and it's a way of just expressing and it's a way to get the word out there.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you're doing this workshop on Saturday, and I'm so glad that folks like you, Shianta, are doing the work that you're doing and raising up archives, because they're powerful. That's our window into the past and so much needed in the present. Now, Isra's Sudanese Valentine's Day Poetry Workshop is this Saturday, Valentine's Day, from 1 to 3. It's at 2464 North Clyburn Avenue, the For Real Therapy offices.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube, but what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
Now let's turn to some of the biggest local stories of the day. At the table to help us out was Claire Lane, WBEZ's Morning Edition anchor, and Courtney Kippers, WBEZ's arts and culture reporter. Early voting started today, so here's Courtney.
The primary for the Illinois General is fast approaching. Election Day is March 17th, but like you said, early voting starts today, so you can head downtown. A reminder, we've got a Senate seat on the ballot. It's a gubernatorial election year. All the state representatives are up for re-election, so it's going to be a busy election season.
Yeah, election season in full swing all across our city and county. Claire, in other news, Miramar Martinez, that's the Chicago woman who was shot 5 times last fall by a Border Patrol agent. New evidence was released that seems to tell a different story than what we've been hearing from the feds. What does it show?
That's correct. So we've been following news that text exchanges, email correspondence, body camera footage might be available in this case soon, and that's exactly what happened. So now we're able to see more physically about the incident and have more context, which, where we know last fall, federal officials claimed that Miramar Martinez rammed a federal agent with her car, which ultimately led to her being shot 5 times. So body camera footage is contradicting that. They're showing in the incident that Border Patrol agent Charles Exum sort of says out loud, quote, "It's time to get aggressive," and then shows him turning his steering wheel to the left toward Martinez's car.
Let's hear that. We've got tape of Charles Exum, followed by Miramar Martinez's attorney, Chris Parente.
"All right, it's time to get aggressive and get the f*** out."
Even Agent Exum admitted that there was no ramming here, and yet again, our government continues to put out statements that Miramar rammed them, which is not true.
Yeah, wow. It's pretty damning evidence there.
Well, and it contradicts the initial accusation, and then the government sort of just continues to stick by that, which we saw a lot happening with testimony from Pam Bondi yesterday. But Homeland Security officials, of course, they have not immediately responded to any request for comment about this.
Yeah, Martinez's attorney, Chris Parente, is actually going to join Mary Dixon and Patrick Smith in the next hour at 10 a.m. on Say More. So stay tuned right here on WBEZ for that conversation. Now, Mayor Johnson was on In the Loop yesterday for our regular Ask the Mayor series. And while Johnson's seemed to back off his ICE on notice executive order, he did look ahead to if and when agents are back here in Chicago in the spring. And he says he wants the public to get in on organizing. Let's hear it.
One of the motivations behind my latest ICE on notice executive order was to have a plan, at least for our police department. We are in conversations with community-based organizations to begin to, quite frankly, train residents to help support community efforts to keep people safe. It has to look like 21st century organizing, but there is a good motto and a template that was used during the Civil Rights Movement.
So you can listen to that full interview at WBEZ.org or on the In the Loop podcast. Also, some breaking news this hour, in the last hour. You just heard it moments ago here on WBEZ. But in case you missed it, Tom Holman, who's the Trump administration's so-called border czar, has announced that the aggressive immigration enforcement in Minneapolis is ending. No word yet on whether ICE and Border Patrol agents could be heading back to Chicago. So stay tuned right here on WBEZ throughout the day. We'll have the very latest on all of those stories. Claire, Chicago City Council members, they're forming a budget group, and they say that it's to hold the mayor accountable and make sure that he implements the budget that they proposed. Another example of the council kind of flexing its muscles in new ways here.
Yes, and sort of trying to continue to intimidate and back Mayor Brenda Johnson into a corner. Tribune reporting this morning that 28 aldermen have formed, we'll call this the Budget Accountability Coalition, and they want to monitor the mayor's implementation of that 2026 budget, which he's talked about extensively on your show. The aldermen say that they're concerned that he's not going to carry out the $16.6 billion plan, which, as we know, passed last December over the mayor's objection. So we'll see what they hold him accountable for.
Mm-hmm. Be interesting. Courtney, tourism nationwide, it's declined slightly in the last year. But it looks like Chicago is on the other side of that equation.
People want to come to Chicago.
Really?
This just in. Yeah.
Breaking news.
This week, Choose Chicago, the city's official tourism agency, released a report that hotel room demand was up 2.3% in 2025 compared to the year before. And like you said, that's in direct contrast. Nationwide, hotel demand was down by half a percentage point. So
people want to come here. Are
they
you surprised?
Eat. Oh, they want to eat. What they want to do is sit down and grub, and that will never change as long as we keep.
Well, we won't let them down on that front.
We won't.
It's like, when are they coming here? Is it in the winter? I find that hard to believe.
Well, we have some nice hotels. That was also a headline
yesterday. We're unthawing.
Right,
we're preparing for visitors.
You can ice skate and look at the bean. Why wouldn't you want to do that?
That is true. We've got a beautiful city. That is
undeniable. And there's Malort, too, to warm you up.
Yeah. Malort, my favorite.
You love it.
Apparently, Courtney, now we can also, in addition to boasting about our beautiful city, we can boast about one of the best hotels in the country.
I know. We're really due for a staycation here, I think, ladies. The Langham in River North was named number 3 on U.S. News and World Report's list of best hotels in America.
Nice. Shout out to the Langham. Have any of you been?
I have not.
I'm not going to tell.
Ooh.
Not on these airwaves.
But the Langham's great. They have their classic, if you've ever seen a pink, hot pink cab that sort of sits outside. Mm. They've got this great omakase restaurant that's been praised. I'm sure you've read about it. One of the best Japanese breakfasts you can get across the country. So they're pulling out some stops and people are taking notice.
Let's go to Portage, Indiana, because there's news there, too. They're unveiling their public pitch, trying to lure the Bears.
Yes. So another reason people come to Chicago, we love our sports. You've got Bulls, Bears, Hawks, Cubs. But right now, we know that Gary Indiana has met with Bears officials and has their hat in the ring for a possible new stadium. But now Portage, Indiana, which isn't that much farther away from downtown Chicago than Gary, has unveiled their own $5 billion privately financed lakefront stadium proposal to try to get the team across state lines. So Portage officials say their plans have been in the works since back in December when the floodgates opened. You know, when the doors opened to Indiana, I think their ears perked up a bit. And when the Bears announced that they were expanding their search to include Northwest Indiana, the town sort of put together this proposal. And it would be, you know, what we're seeing a lot of across the country, an entertainment and sports district, right? Okay. So it would include residential and commercial space.
Okay, so they're thinking of all the things.
they're thinking of all the things and they're trying to make it grand. As we know, and Mayor Johnson has said this, Governor J.B. Pritzker has said this, that Illinois lawmakers are doing whatever they can. They are working diligently to keep the
team
Bears
here. Yes. Yeah. I mean, Arlington Heights is looking like it's taken a step forward there. So, you know, here comes Portage, Indiana. Courtney, is a long shot or what do you think? Do they have a chance?
I don't know. They're the Chicago Bears. It does feel like they belong here in our great city. I don't know. We'll see.
It sounds logical to me, Claire.
I'm not getting on a train or a bus to go across state lines to see a Chicago team home game.
Yeah.
That's just not something I'm willing to.
Portage is offering the stadium rent free, and that is worth, you know, paying attention to. So it'll be interesting to see how this one shakes out. Courtney, Lollapalooza. Well, it's not here yet, not till late summer. We don't know who the lineup is, but...
Do you know, Courtney?
No.
You've got
no,
a crystal ball. I know
no
you do.
Insight. But we do not have the lineup. We probably won't see the official lineup for probably a month or so, but we have got some very smart and savvy music-obsessed colleagues who are doing some predictions.
Oh, boy.
We've got
some... Is it Beyonce? Is she coming? Yes, yes.
Beyonce is not predicted to come this year, but maybe for you, Sasha, maybe. Our colleagues are thinking maybe Lorde will make an appearance. Geese, Olivia Dean. These are some of the
Olivia
names.
Dean would
I know.
Be incredible.
I'm into that, too. Yeah.
Who do you want to see at Lolla, Claire?
That's a great question. I would like to see anybody that's not Gen Z. I think we need to keep Lolla tradition to its roots. I mean, as we know, Jane's Addiction, a band from the 80s and 90s. That's what I want. I want alt grunge. I want alt country. I want MJ Lenderman is who I would want.
Yeah.
Ooh,
Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah, I'm into that.
That's a good one.
I could
one.
See that happening, actually.
Now, Claire, for those who are following the Winter Olympics, the U.S. women's hockey team... They beat Canada.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Sasha.
I'm sad.
But the Canadian captain was down with a lower body injury. So,
and that's the only reason we lost.
Could be partially to blame, but a couple of Illinois women had their hands in that victory 5-0 over Canada. Tessa Janicki and Abby Murphy both had assists in that game. So next up for the women's U.S. squad, including our four Illinois representatives, will be the quarterfinals against Italy, puck dropping Friday. And that'll be a 3:10 Central Standard Time puck drop.
They're doing a fine job. Congratulations. Now, what else are you following in the news?
So this is kind of an interesting crime story, but Chicago police have linked two murders, and they happened yesterday on opposite sides of the city, one in Lakeview and then one in Bronzeville. And the way that they linked them was that the two assailants stole the car of the first man they murdered and then drove it south to the second murder.
Oh, dear.
It's just a case of you know, that crime is still present in Chicago. We're still bringing you the latest, but detectives currently still investigating this, and no one currently is in custody.
Wow. Courtney, let's pivot to the arts. The Art Institute, particularly, got a really cool new acquisition this week.
Yeah, it was a very exciting day at the Art Institute the other day. They have this 1948 Norman Rockwell painting. It's the first Norman Rockwell painting in their huge, massive collection. Mm. And it's got some really tight Chicago connections. It's called The Dugout, and it shows the 1948 Chicago Cubs. They're looking
cool.
A little sad because they've just lost a doubleheader to the Boston Braves. But this is really sort of a star of the Art Institute's collection now. It was a gift to the museum from former Illinois Governor Bruce Rauner and his wife, Diana.
Very cool. And you also reported on some other new acquisitions at the Art Institute. So while you're there checking out this Norman Rockwell Cubs painting, what other art do you suggest that folks take a look at?
Totally. This is not a permanent acquisition at the museum, but I recommend just going right downstairs and seeing Paradise Lost. This is this massive, more than 100 feet long painting, and it is so detailed. It's unbelievable. It's sort of fantastical, allegorical painting, and it's going to be in Chicago until the end of the year, and it's really incredible.
Love my visits to the Art Institute. Always fun. Now, Hamilton. Something else
Hamilton.
That's fun. It's coming back.
I know.
And so is that $10 lottery.
That's right. Hamilton is returning to the CIBC Theater here in Chicago, and it starts on March 4th. And for each of the performances, there are 40 of these $10 tickets available.
Ooh.
And the first of these digital lotteries opens up next week, and you're going to want to be on the Hamilton app on your phone to get in on that.
Where's my cell phone? I got to find it. That's Claire Lane, WBEZ's Morning Edition anchor, and Courtney Kippers from the Arts and Culture Desk.
This episode of In the Loop was produced by me, Micah Yasin, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.